honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an episode marking 15 years since we first got to bring you World War II veterans' memories on the radio, a privilege I certainly will never take for granted. I started out the program by thanking you, the listener, and of course the hundreds of veterans who've been willing to let us into their worlds over the last 15 years. But 15 years ago, the radio landscape, and it's probably even more this way today, was all about what's new, what's trendy, what's hip. So this idea of shining a spotlight decades into the past wasn't exactly checking all the boxes. As a television news director told me in 2005 when I first started interviewing World War II veterans on TV, nobody wants to hear a bunch of old guys talk. I'm so glad that was not the case, and I can't imagine my life without everything all these amazing veterans have added to it over the years. And in light of that, I would be remiss not to thank a seasoned radio pro named Skip Essick, who first greenlighted the idea of Hometown Heroes on the radio, not to mention all the program directors at all the stations who carry Hometown Heroes now. The fact that you are tuned in right at this moment makes you one of millions of Hometown Heroes listeners around the U.S. and around the globe. We hear from listeners in many other countries. And that pumps me up because our goal has always been to deliver these veterans' powerful stories to as many people in as many places as possible, because what they share has so much value for our present and our future. Every once in a while, we've gotten to hear from a name you already knew, like Baseball Hall of Famer Monty Irvin or Louis Zamperini of Unbroken fame. But almost always, it's somebody you've never heard of before, someone not looking for the spotlight, but someone whose experiences humble the rest of us when we realize what they've been through. We've met countless recipients of the Purple Heart, veterans who've been awarded Bronze Stars, Distinguished Flying Crosses, Silver Stars, Distinguished Service Crosses, and even the highest decoration of all, the Medal of Honor. The late Joe Sakato earned his with the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, the legendary unit made up of Americans of Japanese ancestry whose motto was Go for Broke.
Private George T. Sakato distinguished himself by extraordinary heroism in action on 29 October 1944 on Hill 617 in the vicinity of Bifontaine, France. After his platoon had virtually destroyed two enemy defense lines, during which he personally killed five enemy soldiers and captured four, his unit was pinned down by heavy enemy fire. Disregarding the enemy fire, Private Sakato made a one-man rush that encouraged his platoon to charge and destroy the enemy strong point. While his platoon was reorganizing, he proved to be the inspiration of his squad in halting a counterattack on the left flank, during which his squad leader was killed. Taking charge of the squad, he continued his relentless tactics, using an enemy rifle and P-38 pistol to stop an organized enemy attack. During this entire action, he killed 12 and wounded 2, personally captured 4, and assisted his platoon in taking 34 prisoners. By continuously ignoring enemy fire, and by his gallant courage and fighting spirit, he turned impending defeat into victory and helped his platoon complete its mission. Private Sakato's extraordinary heroism and devotion to duty are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit on him, his unit, and the United States Army. What did it mean to you to receive the highest honor that our government can give?
I couldn't believe I was getting the Medal of Honor. To me, I wear this medal for those that didn't come home. The first day fell from Washington, gets killed and died, just loss of blood. The other three guys got sniper wounds right next to me, just in arm's length. Three of them got killed, and I wondered, how is it that I'm able to come out of this alive and to be able to receive this medal? I didn't deserve this medal. I was doing what I was supposed to do, my duty, and when I wear this medal, I wear it for those that didn't make it back. And I also wear it for one German that I shot. I went on a patrol, we got down, and we heard this German giving instructions, and the machine gun opens up, and one of the fellows dang near got shot. And I saw this German that was giving the orders, and I shot him in the legs, thighs. he went down and he saw me. Then he picked up his gun, and when he picked up his gun, I shot him again. I shot him in the groin, and I took off back to our lines, and I hear you screaming and crying for help. And then when I got on top of the hill, our lines, and he's still screaming, and boom, no more screaming. I wonder what happened. Next day we went over and took the hill. I checked on the fellow that I shot. He was in so much pain that he took a grenade and blew himself up, committed suicide. He never went home. So I wear this for him too.
I don't know about you, but that's one of the things that registers most frequently and most deeply with me, the compassion and shared humanity that shines through so many of these veteran stories. Then there's the courage to carry out an assignment in the face of what could be overwhelming obstacles. We've heard from men who landed on D-Day at Normandy or at Iwo Jima or Okinawa, men who flew in fighters, in bombers, those who served on everything from submarines to aircraft carriers. Paratroopers who landed behind enemy lines. And how about those glider pilots like Mel Pliner, whose third one-way glider mission in less than a year in March of 1945 almost claimed his life, but it didn't. So we were able to hear some of his story not long after he experienced an honor flight from Las Vegas to Washington, D.C. with his daughter.
We get ready to approach the Rhine River, drop down to 500. As we cross the river, I couldn't see the Weitzel. But before we took off, I was assigned a bazooka, and my co-pilot had a vest, three rockets in front, three rockets behind for the bazooka.
Right.
We were going to land close to a main intersection highway where we were supposed to join other troops to set up a defense to keep any resupplies from getting to the troops
right
in the front line.
Cutting their supply line.
Crossed the Rhine, dropped down, green light, red light, and I cut loose. And here's a big field, I don't know how many acres, big power lines with the high towers across the field and gliders. Some of them hit the wires. So I figured, well, okay, I cut loose, and I'm heading for that. And I got a place where there's room for me to land my glider. I'm 200 feet high, and I'm holding the wheel like this. And some krauts, a bird shooter. Now, you know, most of the krauts were aiming at the pilot's compartment, and it was going to the tail section. This guy's a bird shooter. You know how you lead birds?
Yeah.
He was a bird shooter. I'm sitting like that, and he gets me right through the arm between the radius and the other.
Still have a scar
see
there?
See that?
Uh-huh.
That's where it came out.
Oh.
I said, take over, I'm hit.
So this is your co-pilot who's never done this before.
He froze.
Can't function.
I pull up the spoiler and held it up with my left foot, and I landed it with my left hand and my right foot.
Because your right hand, you can't do anything
with.
My
right
hand
fell down.
It's useless.
Into shock.
So you're landing this glider one-handed.
One-handed, 1 foot. Of course, I was only about 200 feet high. When I did that, evidently, I took and wiped out the gear on my right side. Just came right off. Because over there, the fields, about every 15 furrows, was a deep one to carry any moisture off the field instead of washing the grass off over to a ravine, little ravine over there. Came to stop with the left wheel in the ravine and my right wing about a foot or two above the ground. By that time, all the troops had gotten out, and my co-pilot came to life, and he got out. I had on a flak vest. Now, a flak vest, it's got two snaps on each shoulder.
Right.
And it's got a belt around the waist with snaps. Supposed to be able to give it one good jerk, and it's supposed to fall off.
Right.
Well, with my arm in shock, I'm pulling with my left hand, and it didn't come off. And I got scared, because with that thing on, you don't move very well.
It's heavy.
I gave it a second pull, and it came off. And I got out and got underneath. Spurt, spurt.
This wound in your arm is spraying blood everywhere.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I get out my first aid kit.
Because you're all alone. Everybody else is left.
Got out, put a bandage. I put it around here to stop the bleeding.
Uh-huh. You had to give yourself first aid.
Yeah. About 30, 40 minutes, my co-pilot is lying on there. And this guy, he wants to get up and run. I says, hell, you wouldn't run 15, 20 feet and they'd shoot you. Because there was still a lot of rifle fire. But it wasn't too long after our troops started to take over, and the rifle fire started to just about quiet down. Shortly after that, a squad of American troops was crossing the field. I said, now's the time to get up and get in the middle of it. And we started yelling and screaming, and about 13 troops turned around with their rifles. American troops, hey, guy! But showed them the American flag on our shoulder. And we got in the middle of them. We got down to the ravine there, and there were other glider pilots there, troops. And there was a first aid guy. Mm-hmm. He saw I had this. He's, what happened to you? I said, I got one through the arm. He said, let me take a look. Took a look at it, put some sulfur, whatever it was, wrapped it, gave me a sling. He said, how does it feel? I said, hurts like hell. He says, here's a morphine syringe. Stick it in your arm. And he says, it'll keep you from hurting, slow you down. I says, I don't want it. If I got to move out, I want to be able to move out, which we did. I started to head back towards the Rhine River.
At the World War II Memorial, where they have that big wall of gold stars, and you know what it represents.
Yeah.
406,000. And you had a couple chances where that could have been you.
Yeah, that's right.
What did you think about when you were looking at that next to a daughter who wouldn't be here if you didn't survive?
That's right. Well, you know, again, I think to myself, if it hadn't been for training and men upset, I wouldn't be here. I think about that. It was a job that I was trained to do, and that's what I did.
And how many times have we heard words just like that from these humble heroes of our greatest generation? What an incredible privilege and incomparable blessing it's been to bring you their stories on the radio these last 15 years. The little glimpses we've taken in today are just a fraction of what we've gotten to absorb together over that time. We cannot thank our veterans enough for what they've done in uniform, and in light of our focus today, we can't thank them enough for being willing to talk about it. And if you'll indulge me just a little bit longer, I have one very brief final clip for you. I don't want to sound melodramatic, but if things had gone a little differently in Pontorson, France, at the start of August in 1944, there never would have been a single episode of this program, let alone 15 years' worth. My grandfather, Dr. Robert Leffler, served with the 6th Armored Division during World War II. He was awarded the Silver Star for pulling 26 men out of burning tanks and half-tracks during a German ambush. He has been the inspiration for all the time I've spent with veterans, and he was one of the first who I interviewed on television way back when. I asked him what he was thinking when enemy artillery continued to pound their position as he and his Jeep driver kept returning to rescue the wounded.
I was pretty sure I was going to get killed.
Well, I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah, you wouldn't be around.
You wouldn't be around, he told me, and boy, is that the truth. I would not be here. And how many of you listening right now are in the same boat? Let me just say one more all-encompassing thank you to everyone who has contributed in any way to 15 years' worth of Hometown Heroes on the radio. I'm Paul Leffler, and I'm going to say it again. Freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.